This episode is brought to you by IVP. Use promo code IVP examine 40. That's IVPEXAMEN 40 at ivpress.com to get 40% off and free US shipping on any IVP resources mentioned in this episode. Even amid a world of pain and anxiety, we still long for a joy that transcends our challenges and gives us meaning and satisfaction. In his award-winning book, Longing for Joy, Alistair Stern offers guidance for becoming people of joyful presence in a culture where hopelessness is the norm. Through theologically grounded insights and research-based practices, Stern addresses the realities of suffering and despair that so many experience, while showing how the God of joy gives you both the capacity for joy and the realities of joyful experience. And as a listener of this podcast, you can receive a special discount on this book. Check the show notes for more details.
This is IVP. My hope and prayer is that in the midst of all you are going through, whatever stage you may find yourself in today, that joy and delight are possible. That in the midst of your tears and in the midst of your grief, that tears of joy may someday come. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Digital Examine podcast. Again, I'm so glad and grateful that you are joining me on this journey. And what a journey it's been. This third season has been full of so many rich, provocative conversations. And our hope and our prayer since the start of the season has been that you might find joy and delight in the midst of all of the ups and downs, the peaks and the valleys of life, in the midst of all of the long, mundane, ordinary plateaus. As we conclude, I thought I would begin by sharing about a sculpture that I have found mesmerizing. There's a sculpture in Rome in a church there called The Ecstasy of Saint Teresa. And it was sculpted by the Italian artist Bernini, 17th century. It's made of white marble. And what's really stunning initially are these bronze golden rays of light. You can look it up online and see it for yourself. And in the sculpture, there are two characters, one an angel overlooking woman who is laid prostrate on the ground. And initially, when you look at this piece, it is the bronze golden rays that capture your attention. But Bernini was known to focus most of his attention, most of his best work, on the facial expressions of his sculptures. And those who have studied this particular sculpture agree that the facial expression of the woman who is laying down is the defining feature of the sculpture. The expression is evocative and provocative, intentionally so. The reason the sculpture is called The Ecstasy of Saint Teresa is because it was inspired by a very brief passage in the autobiography of the 16th century Spanish mystic Teresa of Avila, in which she describes this wild experience of seeing an angel appear before her. And in this brief passage, she writes this, that I saw in his hand, the angel's hand, a long spear of gold, and at the iron's point, there seemed to be a little fire. He appeared to me to be thrusting it, the spear, at times into my heart, to leave me all on fire with a great love of God. And then she writes, the pain was so great, yet so surpassing was the sweetness of this excessive pain that I could not wish to get rid of it. And I pray that God in his goodness would make known to anyone the experience of it, anyone who might think that I'm lying. This is really strange, honestly. The pain was so great, yet so surpassing was the sweetness. Sweet pain. But as strange as this sounds, this sort of paradox is not uncommon in human experience. In fact, in some ways, we might say that paradox is a unique part of what it means to be human. A number of years ago, researchers at Yale University published what is now an influential study on what they called dimorphous expressions of emotion. Now, you don't have to remember that very academic phrase. Dimorphous expressions of emotion are just a fancy way of saying that people often express emotions in opposing or paradoxical ways. And you already know exactly what I'm talking about. Why is it that we cry tears of joy? Or why do we laugh nervously? Why do we squeeze or pinch the cheeks of babies we adore, causing them some modicum of pain? Why do we say things are bittersweet? Why do we smile at funerals and cry at weddings? What the Yale researchers discovered was that when emotions feel like they're going to get extreme, these sort of paradoxical expressions are the human body's attempt at emotional regulation. And this is a natural, normal thing to do for humans. A little while ago, I took my two young children skiing for the very first time, and they loved it. And my son, especially, who is 7 years old, he picked it up pretty quickly and just he wanted to ski like all day. So we did two almost full days together out on the slopes. And even though he picked it up quickly, the reality is like nobody looks normal or cool the first time they learn to ski. And his arms and legs are flailing everywhere. He's stumbling and falling, but he's picking himself right back up. And these wild movements of his body were attempts to feel normal amid disorientation. And it's the same exact thing with our emotional lives. We cry when we're happy. We laugh when we're nervous. We smile as we grieve. We pinch as we love. And these are all attempts to feel normal amid overwhelming disorientation and emotion. There's this story in the book of Genesis in chapters 17 and 18 about Abraham and Sarah. And in this story, they reveal to us dimorphous expressions of emotion. Genesis 17 says that God said to Abraham, "Your wife, Sarai, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah because I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her." And then Abraham fell face down and he laughed. Now, we might think maybe he laughed out of sheer joy. Sarah had been barren up to this point. But he said to himself, "Will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? If you know the Abraham and Sarah story, you know that this was not the first time God had made this promise. In fact, God had first made the promise way back in Genesis chapter 12. Now, that's just five short chapters in our Bibles, but in Abraham and Sarah's lives, it was almost a quarter century. It was 24 years back. Abraham already at that time was 75 and Sarah was 65. They were well past normal childbearing age. And at that point, the promise probably felt unlikely, but maybe, just maybe, right? God can do anything. And why would God make such a promise unless he planned on fulfilling the promise? But by Genesis 17, again, it's been almost a quarter century. Abraham's almost 100. Sarah is staring at 90. And what started out as a shocking promise and the possibility of miraculous hope now probably sounds to Abraham like a cruel joke. And not just Abraham, Sarah too. In Genesis 18, these angels of the Lord visit Abraham and Sarah. They say to them, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him, and Abraham and Sarah were already very old. That is like understatement of the year. And Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So what does Sarah do? Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, after I am worn out and my Lord is old, will I now have this pleasure? Now for us, with the gift of insight, we know that God does eventually provide Abraham and Sarah a son. And so with that gift of insight, we might read this text as straightforward evidence of a lack of faith, right? They didn't believe enough. But that's, to do so is to like flatten these biblical characters. I mean, these were real people with real hopes, real disappointments, real doubt, real emotion. I mean, have you ever waited excruciatingly long for something good? Maybe you're waiting for something good right now. What happens in that waiting? In the world of psychology, there's this popular equation about happiness, that reality divided by expectations equals happiness. And so what we normally do in our waiting, what we normally do in the midst of uncertainty or anxiety or pain or fear or whatever else, as we face disappointment after disappointment after disappointment, we lower expectations to feel better. Think about that phrase. Lower expectations to feel better. And this is a dimorphous expression of emotion. This is the strange paradox of being human. Some of us are living in that gap of waiting right now. Maybe it's financial pressure or career uncertainty. Maybe it's a strained relationship, friendship, marriage. Maybe it's anxiety or depression or just a general sense of restlessness or malaise. Maybe it's illness or chronic pain or an unexpected diagnosis. Maybe it's an addiction or a sin pattern you can't seem to shake. Maybe it's grief or loneliness or spiritual emptiness. It is in this gap that joy can carry us. It is in the gap of waiting. It's in the gap built on uncertainty that faith and trust can lead us to joy. There's this incredible thing that happens in the Abraham and Sarah story. In Genesis 18, right after Sarah laughs, it says this: "The Lord said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I am old?' And then he says, 'Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son.'" You know, it's interesting. The Lord asks a question: why did Sarah laugh? But he doesn't allow Abraham to respond. A question left unanswered is not really a question. It's rhetorical. It's a setup for the declarative statement, which also comes in the form of a question. Is anything too hard for the Lord? In other words, even though it's spoken as a question, it intends a sort of finality. It's a declarative statement. We see this actually quite clearly later in the Hebrew scriptures. Jeremiah 32, it says, "Sovereign Lord, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power and outstretched arm. Nothing is too hard for you." But when you're in it, when you're in the midst of uncertainty and anxiety and pain, when you have that emptiness, that void, that unanswered prayer that lingers above you all the time like a dark cloud, it's hard to believe. And in those moments, I just want to tell you, it's okay to laugh. It's okay to linger in disbelief. It's okay to desire and long for possibility, but still live uncertain if that thing you so desperately desire will happen. It's interesting, you know, the journey of faith I have found looks strangely similar to the stages of grief. You know, they talk about the stages of grief, that when you hit a real dark valley in your life, the stages typically look like denial. Man, this can't be happening. And then anger, like, why is this happening? And then bargaining, you know, if only I had done this or not done that. Or what if this had happened or that hadn't happened? That often leads to depression. Man, this is really happening. And then finally, acceptance. This is reality. In the journey of faith that leads to joy, there are similar movements. We begin with denial. Man, there's no way this can happen. And then anger, like, why? Why won't it happen? Why not me? And then bargaining, if only I had prayed more or done more. And then sometimes depression. I don't think this will ever happen. I wonder if Abraham and Sarah were in that place. This is never going to happen. Doesn't matter what you say. I'm 100 years old. I'm really going to have a kid now. But finally, it can lead to acceptance. Maybe possibility still exists. And this is the key to discovering real joy and real delight in the midst of all of the cynicism and despair. The writer Frederick Buechner once said that sometimes wishing is the wings the truth comes on. And sometimes the truth is what sets us wishing for it. My hope and prayer is that in the midst of all you are going through, whatever stage you may find yourself in today, denial or anger, bargaining, depression, or finally acceptance, that you would cling in faith and in trust that your laughter of disbelief can be transformed into the laughter of joy, that joy and delight are possible, that in the midst of your tears and in the midst of your grief, that tears of joy may someday come, and that you might find yourself someday smiling through the grief. It isn't to say that God will give you exactly what you think you need to be happy. Often he doesn't. But it is to say that God knows you better than you know yourself, and he will, in love, somehow, someday, some way, give you exactly what you need, and that maybe you already have exactly what you need. And in that place of deep contentment, built on faith and trust, you might discover joy and delight even now. I want to close this episode and this season by breaking from tradition and praying a different prayer of blessing over you from Teresa of Avila, who I mentioned at the start of the episode. It's a prayer often attributed to her. So just take a few deep breaths. Maybe if you're in a place where you can close your eyes and open your hands, feel free to do so. If you're not, if you're driving or doing something else, please don't. But just center your heart. Open your mind to receive. Let nothing disturb you. Let nothing frighten you. All things are passing away. God never changes. Patience obtains all things, because whoever has God lacks nothing, because God alone satisfies and suffices. Amen. Again, thank you so much for joining us on the journey of the Digital Examine. And I do want to invite you, stay tuned. We have a special mini-series coming in late summer, in August. And in this series, we'll explore these key movements of the prayer of examine, invitation, gratitude, reflection, confession, and looking forward. I'll be in conversation with wonderful guests like Ann Boskamp, Ken Shigematsu, Faith Yuri Cho, and others. And these conversations will lead us into the fall, when I am so excited to be able to share with you my next book called The Pace of Peace, Distraction, Attention, and the Gifts of an Examined Life. And so I'm so excited that we're gonna be connecting again sooner than we normally do between seasons. So be on the lookout for the special miniseries on the Digital Examine podcast feed, and grace, peace, and love to you in the season ahead. Thanks again for joining us. The Digital Examine is a production of InterVarsity Press. For more information on any IVP titles mentioned on this episode, visit ivpress.com and use the promo code in the show notes for a special discount. Sound engineering by Honest Podcasts. Our producers are Christine Policio Mello and Travis Albritton. And I'm your host, J.Y. Kim. Don't forget to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the IVP YouTube channel, and leave a rating and review to support the show.